Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden.
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everybody. Chuck Bunnell, Julie Hayden, True Straight Up on this snowy party Friday.
Snowy party Friday, but that's all right. Maureen, sooner or later, it's going to melt and it will be summer in Colorado.
Eventually.
Hopefully. Hey, have a lot going on. We're going to have Patrick Neville on as usual on Fridays.
And a real special treat. We're going to have Julie McCallum wrote a great email on should you get the shots or not. And she's got a great perspective. And
keeping you alive, Dr. Julie McCallum with Denver Synergetics, one of our sponsors, along with AmericanCitizenPress.com. One of the things that Julie McCallum wanted to talk about is there is a proposal in the Colorado legislature that would essentially prohibit discrimination against anyone who does not want to get the COVID vaccine. I think it would actually just make it, you couldn't ask minor HIPAA laws, and you couldn't discriminate against somebody. And one of the things she wanted to talk about is all the reasons why it's a kind of a decision that should be made between you and your doctor. And there, it's not just, I know that the NBA is telling us.
Yeah. You and Kevin Priola.
Not only Kevin Priola, but you and, whatever latest Hollywood celebrity, or CNN person is getting their vaccine. God knows we should rely on them. So we'll be talking to her about that.
But right now, we've got our favorite minority report from Patrick Neville, who's been working hard down in the Capitol, preventing him from totally destroying the state. How's it going, Patrick? How much destruction did we do? They do to
this
us
week.
This week?
Oh, it was budget week, so plenty. They pillaged your wallets and got drunk on all their pillage and plunder.
Yeah, there you go.
So I missed that. Who are you guys having on next?
Oh, Julie McCallum. There is apparently, Kim, you may might as well ask you about this. I think Kim Ransom and somebody else has a bill that would prohibit discrimination. What is it? It's House Bill. I cleverly forgot to write down the House bill, but it's a bill that would prohibit discrimination.
I know which bill you're talking about. Yep, Kim Ransom's bill. Kim Ransom is a rock star.
She's
on this bill. She's in the JBC. And I will tell you, she is by far and large the most conservative member we've ever had in the history of Colorado on the Joint Budget Committee.
Yay!
So to give an example of this, so there was like an unwritten rule with JBC when the budget comes forward that all JBC members will vote for the budget. And Kim Ransom was the first person, at least in my knowledge, that was on the Joint Budget Committee to vote no on the budget. She did last year. And she did the same thing this year, voted no. And so we had the entire Republican caucus in the House of Representatives vote no on the budget, except for our leadership. So that's how this went. So even though the budget grew and we had all sorts of amendments, including an amendment that would actually defund the Colorado Immunization Information System, where they collect all of your immunization information, with a footnote saying that this can't be used for vaccine passports. Democrats killed that amendment. I ran another amendment that had it basically said, hey, we're not going to do a single cut in Colorado. We're going to put every department at this year's funding levels for next fiscal year. So we're not going to cut them at all. We'll leave them, right even. And we'll even let K-12 program funding increase. And we'll put the rest towards roads and bridges.
Oh,
and
you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. Yeah, but you don't want to do that. You don't want to give today's woke CDOT anything.
<They're> just cut their budget.
They're as crooked as you could possibly. You might as well have given it to the mafia.
We're working on a story. Yeah, we're working on another story at the Glendale Tribune.
What the Democrats are going to do is give it to every other department and waste it all, and then come back with a different bill and say, we don't have money for transportation.
Right.
So we want to fix your transportation. We're just going to need more of your money. Oh, and we're going to find ways to do it without a vote. of the people, because the people keep saying, no, you're not going to take any more of our money. So they're going to try to find ways to do it.
Well, what's happened to the
people? And that's the main reasoning why I wanted to run this, because they always like to say, well, if we fund roads, you know, people are going to die. We just don't have money. We'll have to cut all these other services. And so the point of running that amendment was to say, no, look, we could do this without a single cut and almost double CDOT's budget. And of course, that was defeated. I had my favorite amendment, though. You guys will, Chuck will really enjoy this.
Okay.
My favorite amendment that we ran was to send the governor's salary to the unemployment compensation fund. We figured, you know what, it's his orders that put everyone out of work, and he still gets to collect his salary, so we may as well send that to the unemployment compensation fund.
But,
you know, of course, that didn't get passed either.
No, they didn't do that.
Ask you this one. There was a Democratic bill that's supported by Mike Kopp, who used to be one of the leading Republicans in the legislature in Colorado, concerned, saying that we'll just impose massive fees to fund CDOT. But that got pulled, I understand. Do you know where it's at?
Oh, they're still working on it. You're going to still see Matt Green, Faith Winter, put something forward. It's going to be a fee or a tax increase of some sort. And so,
will be a tax increase.
And Colorado Concern are always supporting something that's
right.
You know, when it comes to roads and bridges, they'll say, oh, guys, we get like $1 million general fund or $100 million general fund. So, this is such a good deal for the people. So, let's go ahead and tax more fees. But the people are saying, no, we don't want any more fees. And,
right.
Yeah,
well, if you had to compare, who's worse, Mike Kopp or Kevin Priola?
Chuck.
Who's better? I'll put it on the positive. Who's the better between those two?
Well, Kevin Priola takes the cake on that one.
Okay.
You know, I was reading. I know. Here's what I wanted to ask you. So the BLM and the Party for Socialism and Liberation are holding a peaceful protest tomorrow at the state capitol. Have you seen? Are they gearing up for more peaceful protesting down there?
Yeah. Any burning, looting?
Yeah, it was kind of odd walking in today. You know, they started throwing down the barriers and the barriers in the parking circle. I'm going, what's going on here? And then we even walk into the chamber and they've got all the chamber doors locked with the sergeant at arms at every chamber door, which is kind of unusual because we have these different back doors we can use that are usually wide open. Everything's locked. And we were trying to ask, hey, guys, what's going on here? You know, no one would say anything, but that's what I've gathered enough information to realize is, yes, they are preparing for the BLM. You know, of course, mostly peaceful protests tomorrow.
Mostly peaceful. Well, they attacked a CNN reporter who's describing it as mostly peaceful. It's just a joke. Well, what about
Peaceful burnings.
Mostly peaceful burnings. Destruction of stuff. What about the public option bill, which is like the destroy your health care choice?
Destroy your health care in Colorado.
How's that? Because I think you were talking about that last week, and it didn't pass immediately. But what's this? Because I think that's one we all need to be keeping an eye on. What's the status of that?
Yeah, so they heard that for hours and hours last week, and they finished it probably 5 or 6 hours after we spoke last week in committee, and they just laid it over for action. And so what I'm hearing is going on is the governor's trying to be stubborn and saying he doesn't want any amendments to it. And there are at least a couple Democrats that are saying, well, we need amendments to this before we'll pass it. My guess is they'll get some sort of amendments that still won't do a whole lot and still pass it. And then, of course, you've got, you know, some squishy Republicans out there that are demanding just dumb demands like, hey, we need a sunset on this thing. And just telling people, look, that's not going to do anything, because the whole idea of this, they'll probably throw a sunset on there. Right. And, you know, 1 or 2 year sunset on there isn't going to be a big deal, because guess what? That's their plan, is to phase this thing over 2 to 3 years and eliminate every other insurance program.
Right.
So we can't, I mean, a sunset's not going to do any good. By then, it's going to eliminate all the private insurance. All the good doctors are going to have already fled the state, and it'll be too late. And they'll say, oh, hey, guys, we've got to renew this because this is the only option left in town.
And one thing, I think Christy Burton Brown, the new chair of the Colorado Republican Party, I thought did a good job. We talked about this Wednesday, putting out some talking points for people to share on this, and noted, you know, thousands of healthcare jobs would be lost in Colorado because of that just alone.
Oh, that's okay, because then they can go work in the oil and gas. No, they can't work in the oil and gas. Well,
no.
Then they can go to the ranches.
No, restaurants can't do that. Well, and does anyone?
They can get the governor's.
Well, does anyone? Me nuts, though. about when it comes to Republican talking points is they'll say, like, oh, we're going to lose healthcare jobs, and oh, this is going to hurt hospitals. They don't talk enough about how, no, this is going to hurt every single Coloradan in the state of Colorado. I mean, look, yes, is it going to hurt those people? Yes. Is it going to take jobs away? Yes, but it is going to absolutely turn your personal health care, no matter what system you are under right now, it's going to turn it upside down. Like, I'm retired military, so I can maintain my TRICARE if I want to. TRICARE is not going to go away under this plan, but guess what is? My doctor is, because my doctor is not going to be able to be profitable because the state public option is not going to pay him enough. So he's going to go and leave to a different state. And then eventually you're not going to have enough doctors. They're not going to be able to afford their malpractice insurance. So the government's going to come in and do what they always try to do best, which is fix problems that they created, and then just make the entire system a government system so that they can have doctors not pay their malpractice insurance.
Would you be allowed to get?
We're going to get the doctors that have the highest malpractice rates in their insurance, and have them the doctors that you want.
Well, and then
can you go up to Wyoming and get treated?
Yeah, I'll have to go get there.
That's not a facetious question. I'm on Medicare plus Humana, whatever that thing is. Can I move that to Wyoming or someplace where they're going to have a few doctors? Man, probably not.
My guess is so under the state bill, it mandates that every provider has to accept this insurance, but they can't make that mandate extend to Wyoming. So my guess is even if you try to go to a different state, they're going to say, under these rates, no, we're not accepting this insurance.
Does anyone ever mention, haven't we as voters of Colorado voted this down repeatedly? I mean, does anyone mention that in an amendment? Like, hey, we know everyone hates this, but we're going to do it anyway?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's the same thing that always goes on with Democrats is they say, oh, well, the voters don't want to give us a tax increase, so we'll just find a sneaky way to do it. Right. Same thing has happened here. They tried universal health care through Amendment 69. It didn't work. So now they've just kind of tweaked a couple of things and repackaged it.
Yeah.
And they're going to just pass it through, and the voters are going to go, they're going to find out what mess they've gotten themselves in by electing Democrats once this thing actually does go through, and they can't find a doctor in their entire state. Their insurance plan goes away. Companies start leaving because they can't recruit talent or employees here.
Thinking that the voters put the Democrats in ballot.
Yeah.
The ballot harvesters put the Democrats in ballot. And various of those ballot harvesting people are from Alzheimer's clinics and everything else. I mean, in the voters,
try to do the right thing. What about this? Mark has a question, Patrick. When are the doctors going to protest and speak up about this? I would think it would greatly upset them. I think they have, haven't they? Isn't the healthcare industry speaking up, or are they just sort of like sitting ducks and just trying to not be the one that gets hit first?
No, they have. I mean, they've been spoken up. This is one of the few bills that's actually getting some attention down there from like the chambers of commerce types, and Colorado Concern is even putting some energy into it. And so it's one of the few bills. I mean, compared to we're just all sorts of garbage is just coming through the state. I mean, I think I hit the low of my legislative career during a hearing yesterday when they started off the committee reading a letter about a lady who was unhappy with her dating service because it didn't provide enough good matches for her. And so she was upset and went to Kathy Kipp, a Democrat out of Fort Collins, and got them to run a bill. And it looks like the Democrats are going to work some amendments to pass this bill that says, well, you can get a refund if you're not
happy with
your dating service after a certain trial period of time.
I happen to know a couple people that hear that bill.
I mean, look, I am thankful every day that I married my high school sweetheart, but I've never been more thankful than during that hearing. Like, it must be really rough out there dating that the government's got to come in and solve it for you. I mean, there might be something else going on there if the government has to.
Honestly, I can update you because I have a female friend who forked over $3,000 to the dating service. And she said, she didn't know a lot of requirements. She said, I just don't want him to be shorter than me. And I'd like him, within 10 years or something. And they sent over a 4'11", 80-year-old, and she said she wanted her money back, and they refused to give the money back. So maybe this is a good bill.
They would get that CNN guy, right, who went on the Tinder date five times before they got scammed.
Yeah, probably the real thing that happened.
Well, here's the thing, too.
CNN guy was really not happy with his date, so he got him the Democrats to run a bill.
It's like, who would go on Tinder five times? It's like, I mean, give me a break. But, you know, there could be some sense that we have another friend. We won't use anybody's names.
No names on this show.
But this person is older, and he wanted to date somebody who was like 24 and was complaining the dating service. And they kept saying, trying to say politely, see, they get to see your picture too.
I'm thinking in my head too that if you're so mad about this that you went and went to a legislator to pass a bill about this, there's probably other reasons, you know, why you're not trying. This is like the ultimate call the manager, you know.
It's the ultimate Karen. This is, we got to see this person's picture. This is the ultimate.
This is a good bill. It's finally a good bill.
I think you should vote for that. I think that'll teach those millennials. I think you should vote for that. That will teach everybody to pay more attention to what's going on.
Was that going to pass? Is that got a good chance of passing?
Yeah, they laid it over because they're working on some amendments, but it sounds like the committee is going to, instead of just doing the right thing and saying this thing is, there's no place even being heard, let's kill it right here. They laid it over. They're working on some strike blows and trying to figure out the language to make it better. Because even the AG, our wonderful Attorney General, jumped in and supports the bill as well. And so,
excellent.
Yeah, they're trying to work.
How about House leadership? House leadership behind it too?
You know, it wouldn't shock me, you know, if they voted for the largest budget in Colorado history. I guess we'll have to just see where they're at on this. Maybe they can think the government can solve this too. Maybe take some more of your money to solve it as well.
But what was the reasoning by the great Hugh of why he was supporting the Democratic proposal?
I can't think of a reason why. Like I said, like in the history of JBC, I'm not aware of. We've had some good conservatives on JBC too, like Kent Lambert. Who always voted for the budget and stuck to the rule. But even on this one, Kim Ransom said, no, I'm not voting for this. It's a huge, massive increase to dollars to programs that we don't agree with. We're doing things like funding abortion services for illegal immigrants, spending all this ridiculous so-called stimulus money, yet we can't even afford, you know, a simple little grant program for schools to beef up their school security. And so she voted no. And so I was kind of shocked to see it. I'm like, wow, 23. Okay, that leaves at least one.
Yay. Well, let me just a couple final questions for you. Anything coming up? I mean, we'll be keeping an eye on this dating thing because that's crucial. I mean,
that's an important one. Now you're getting down to the nitty gritty of where average people are affected.
So I think I wanted to go back. So if the dating service, if there's something about me, because I mean, I know people who use these and pretty much everybody can find dates, right? And I know plenty of people actually have found people and they've fallen in love and got married. But it's like, so if the dating service person can't get you a date, you get your money back without any kind of...
Well, they don't provide you anymore.
Yeah, they just take the money
and then they say, we're not going to give you any live human beings. And then they leave it up to them to have to sue them to say, you know, we got you that midget guy. What are you complaining about?
They basically want three days to do a trial service, and then if it's you can cancel the subscription after 30 days, and then you've got to give a notice, like a 15-day notice, a 10-day notice, 5-day notice, but to allow them to cancel it in time instead of the person just canceling it on their own. It's just, look, I'll admit, I am probably the least experienced dater down there in the General Assembly, having married my high school sweetheart. And I'm perfectly fine with that.
That didn't slow you down on the gambling bill. You were maybe the least intelligent person on human gambling. But,
I would agree with that too on gambling. But here's what I do know. I do know that the government screws up everything it touches.
Yes.
So we probably don't want the government messing with dating in any sort of way.
Yeah, no,
so
what should, just for final question for you, what should people be keeping their eyes open for next week? God, assuming the Capitol survives the peaceful protests.
Some good news. Just give me a glimmer of hope in something. Just anything. It doesn't matter what it is. It's just a glimmer of hope.
Your kids' T-ball.
Kids to anything, just anything.
You know, there's one bill it's amazing that this is how bad it's down there, that we're actually, we got out of committee barely, but we did get it out of committee, and we might actually pass it on the floor of the House. But it's a bill that just allows, and I like this because typically as a veteran myself, I hate it when they give like kind of pork handouts to make veterans, this poor special class that has to be taken care of. I think that actually does a disservice to veterans. So I usually don't support them. But what I like about this bill is if companies want to, they can have a veteran's preference in their hiring process. So if you have two candidates that are equal and one's a veteran, they can use that in their decision-making process to hire a veteran. But I tell you, even that bill is having a tough time. You actually have David Ortiz, who is a veteran himself. He's actually in a wheelchair because of service-related issues in combat, and is the sponsor of the bill. But even that bill is getting attacked because they're saying that they're it's going to overwhelmingly, disparately help more white people than minorities. So we can't pass this bill. So even his bill is getting attacked by his own party. That's just how radical we've gone in the state.
Well, it's
crazy.
It's an Asian hate bill too.
Right. Yeah. It's like, all right. Well, we'll cross our fingers and hope that it gets passed. And Patrick, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Patrick Noble there. Are we going to keep our eye on a dating service bill? Here's what that's going to do. That's going to, if you're a dating service, you're going to look at the person, you're going to be like,
it is so bad out there for virtually anybody they've got great salesmen apparently for this.
About all the free apps, though? I mean, I thought the apps were free.
Yeah, but then you get what you pay for.
No, I've got my daughter met her boyfriend who we love. I've got another friend. I mean, I've had a ton of friends who've met people on the free apps. So my advice is use the free apps first. And if that doesn't do good,
All right.
Wait, what is? In some states, after 5 Tinder dates, it's a common law marriage. That's true. So that CNN guy is actually married to the Project Veritas person. I do have to say, I mean, I don't know a lot about Tinder. But I have heard friends who've talked about it over the years. And as I understand it, there's like one point about Tinder, and that's to hook up, right? There are other apps that it's more like to meet people. And so why is this guy, it kind of throws into question the whole intelligence level of people at CNN. But that's a whole other story.
No, you don't get it. He fell in love.
Oh yeah, I fell in love. That
you
one,
did. Well, yeah, that's right, what right he up, says. Right he said, yeah, I was stupid, but I really liked her. Right I didn't care. I didn't care if we went to bed right away. I really liked her.
Right.
Of course, I really liked her because she was lying to me.
About everything.
And telling me how wonderful I was when she really thought I was a piece of horse manure.
She's recording it and speaking to my microphone.
Well, you know how effluent, a woman who wants something can be. And this guy probably thought she was the greatest thing in his life.
She's a great listener.
And then he finds out she's
recording him.
Recording him. Well, any woman likes you, remember that.
It's probably recording you.
And they work for a investigative unit.
Hey, we've got Julie McCallum, Dr. Julie McCallum, coming up here in about 5 minutes. Real quick, though, I see Ben is on with us on Zoom. Ben sent me and you an email, and I think he was talking to you about it, about some of the voting machines. This is just something to be aware of.
Let me just
mention this real quick, because Ben was kind enough to send it. The voting machines, they have, basically the bottom line is, this is very layman's terms, but this is in some counties in the country, and it's not just the Dominion machines, where they essentially have a chip in there that acts as a modem. So even though they're telling
that's offline. That's way too complicated.
All right. Sorry, Ben, I tried.
Let's talk about something else that Ben and I have been doing. I've been traveling around the state trying to liberate Republican primaries. Ben just gave it a thumbs up. We went down to El Paso, and anybody knows anything about Republican politics knows that that's a hotbed between the establishment and the grassroots, and they're usually at each other's throats. And we figured, Ben's our getaway driver, so we left the car running, pointing out, figuring we might. But we went down.
You would be attacked by establishments.
Yeah.
But you were not.
We're not. We got a great reception. We've been up in Adams County, which is friendly territory. We had a great reception there. We went over to the Arapaho Tea Party. I got a great reception there. We're now going to Mesa. as Ben calls it, a quick trip to Mesa. And I said, well, how many hours does it take to get to Mesa? Said, well, about five.
Yeah.
So hey, that's a quick trip. 10 hours of driving for a quick trip. But we'll go anywhere to pick up a vote to liberate our promise from the hideous, awful Democrats.
That's right. That's right. This is from Mark. Oh, what happened to the Party Friday drink? I do not know about you, but I am ready for a drink after listening to Patrick every Friday, going to get a scotch. Mark, you take one for us. We did not. I felt that it was not wise for me or Chuck to be drinking too much on the air. And plus, I couldn't figure. I'm basically a pretty like vodka and club soda person.
Yeah, vodka in drink, and that's Julie's kind of mixology.
I couldn't.
Mixology. It's usually club soda, but sometimes it's lemon. It's just pour vodka into mixer,
and you go and 1,000, 2,000.
But she does have a little a little shot glass. You know, shot glasses were invented. Really not to prevent you from overpouring, but prevent bartenders from overpouring, giving you too much alcohol. I never really saw the point in one. You know, like, well, oh, I overpoured. Oh, my gosh.
I better tell the owner.
Oh, that's me. That's me.
Anyway, that's a good idea. Maybe next week we'll have drinks, but everyone else, go get yourself a scotch or a drink of your choice if you want. But yeah, Chuck and these guys, you guys are doing a great job. When he says they want to liberate the Republican Party, what he's talking about is get us out of this system that the Democrats conned us into, that says we have to have an open primary so unaffiliated voters can vote in the Republican primary. All that's happened as a result of that is the Democrats are spending not even dark money, they're openly spending it now on Republican races. So you have Democrats spending all of their money outspending Republicans in the primary to make sure that their fake Republican
like Hugh McCain who's going to be voting for the Democratic awful budget. He was enormously helped by these people because they wanted to get Patrick out of the way because he was a conservative. So we can't have that. We got to have just a uniparty.
Right.
So it will get us less Kevin Priolas, less Hugh McCain's, or maybe more. Maybe be all Democrats.
But
it can't be any worse.
Here's from Charlene. She says, I bet Chuck is a persuasive speaker on the Freedom Circuit. Yeah, Charlene, they've got maybe we'll have to have them do the presentation on the show. They've got Chuck, Anil, Ben. I mean, you've got the whole Peg Cage. They've got a whole lineup.
Peg Cage is going to be joining me down in for the EC meeting in Arapahoe County.
Yeah. No, so we'll do a show on that. We've got all kinds of stuff. We've got secret news about Tay Anderson, more bad news for Tay Anderson to talk about on Monday.
Yeah,
we've got all kinds of stuff going on. The Glendale Troy Creek Chronicle, working on another investigative piece.
And the poor villager, our competitor. I mean, wow. I mean, they did an April spoof on having a Chinese amusement park coming to Greenwood Village, and you thought they'd murdered a few Asians.
Well, here's the thing, Joe Biden.
Oh, my God. All the demand, their advertisers. And we've gone through this, too, because anytime you say anything that the left doesn't like, then everybody and their mother.
It seems like it's actually about like four people on Twitter.
They made the Asian couple the villagers of the year back a year or two ago. And they turned on them saying, you dirty scum. Don't try to use us for your racist stuff. You stink.
Meanwhile,
you
Joe Biden.
And all you people stink.
Joe Biden.
And we're all calling all your advertisers. And we'll tell them, how dare you do anti-Asian hate crime people. The Swinneys are hate crime people.
No, they're, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, they're not. The villager basically features pictures of old Republicans going to charity events. I mean, they're about as non-controversial as you could ever get.
Well,
they did a great job. And they're the only one you can do a legal notice in that doesn't cost you a fortune. Unlike the Post. But we got to get rid of them. They're a hate group.
But we need to talk about Joe Biden's Asian hatred, though, too.
Oh, yeah.
So there, and this is all over on Twitter if you guys haven't seen it. So when the Japanese prime minister came to visit Donald Trump, there was very cool. Donald Trump stood there outside the door, just like you do. I mean, it's a foreign leader, right? He greets the guy. He's there at the front door with the Marine guys next to him, walks him into the White House, tours around a little bit. Okay. Joe Biden did not. He snubbed the Japanese prime minister today, sent Kamala Harris down there, who made some bizarre, then cackling cackling, weird comment about when they met.
Hate speech.
Hate speech.
Cackling hate speech.
And so, I mean, it's like, what's with Joe Biden? Why can't, and then Joe's sitting at the table to talk to the guy when he walks in. It's like, talk about, I mean, on Twitter, it's kind of funny. Now it's trending. Stop Joe Asian hate.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
It's just like, it's just ridiculous.
All right. Now we've got the person who saved my life.
Peter Boyle's life.
Now that maybe she could be criticized for, but she also saved Peter Boyle's life, and is an extraordinary physician, a wellness physician. You want to lose weight, you want to get bigger back, you want to get your life back. But Julie McCallum of Synergetics is great. Julie, great to the show. Coming to the show.
Chuck, thank you so much, and both of you. It's been so wonderful to know you both for several years, and thanks for having me on your show.
This is, you know what, Julie, this is going to freak you out. It's been more than several years. The first time I met you in person, we were on a cruise with Peter, and I was pregnant.
And
we
were pregnant.
And Rev is 10. Rev is 10 now. So I don't know how he got 10 years older.
Thank
God for Synergetics. That's all I can say.
It's quite a few years.
Okay, so I wanted to talk to you, and you mentioned, and this is a great bill, of course, probably the Democrats will kill it, but basically a bill that would prohibit discrimination against people who decide that they don't want to get the COVID-19 vaccine. Let me just kind of jump right into it and ask you, why do you think that that's a good idea?
First of all, the two messenger RNA injections that are out with the purpose not of preventing COVID, but of decreasing the risk of severe COVID disease are not immunizations. So I just call them shots.
Okay.
They are a different technology. They're not standard vaccination technology as the Johnson & Johnson was. So they're something that hasn't been studied in large groups of people over many, many years. And so let's just sort of distinguish that. So all of a sudden, you've got a massive injection of people with technology that's, you know, 15 years old or so, but has never been used in large numbers of human beings before. And now there's quite a bit of talk of making it mandatory, or at least mandatory if you want to participate in society.
Right.
Well, number one, whether or not I choose to get one of these injections is really a very private decision between me and my physician. And it hinges upon my understanding of these shocks, my health situation, my risk for getting severe coronavirus. Someone like me, I'm not at risk for getting a severe case of coronavirus. And there are lots of ways you can, lots of things you can do to markedly decrease your risk of getting severe coronavirus short of taking one of these injections. So why should I be excluded or people like me from society just because we haven't succumbed to the social pressure of getting an experimental injection?
Right. Well, and let me, one thing too that I've got to wonder about is today now there's another one coming out. So, I mean, I just always am like, follow the money here. So you've got another one of the pharmaceutical companies is saying, oh, guess what? Actually, so you have to get two, but now we determine they only last 6 months and you got to get one in another 6 months and every 6 months for the rest of your life. I mean, when does it end is my thing too. I mean, to me, it seems clearly somebody's making money. Yeah. I mean, all being funded by our tax dollars, if not us. I mean, to me, I absolutely agree with you. But I mean, have you heard that too? Does that even remotely make, what's a vaccine or what's the point of getting a shot if it's only good for 6 months and then you got to keep getting it for the rest of your life?
Well, the point of that is economic gain for the company who makes the injection.
Yes.
That's it. That it's from a health perspective, there's some evidence that people who have received one of these mRNA shots then will have a worse experience with some of the variants, whereas people who've had the endemic coronavirus do better at fighting off some of these variants.
Right. Let me ask you this, because here's a question I have. And I think we'll open up the phones. If people have questions too, 888-627-6008. So speaking to Dr. Julie McCallan from Senegenics. So Chuck and I mean, I'm pretty sure we had COVID way back in the fall. Mm-hmm. I like Rand Paul, where he says, if you're recovering from it, which would be us, or you've had the shot, there's no need for you. You don't need to be socially isolating. I mean, but I've heard from some people, and some doctors have indicated there are concerns that for people like us who had it, if we get this shot, as you call it, that actually that might make us, I mean, there are all kinds of questions about that, aren't there?
Absolutely. It could make you sicker. You could have an excessively ramped up immune reaction against the virus when you get it again. Keep in mind that this virus, though manufactured in a lab in Wuhan, China, it's not a completely, quote, natural virus, but it does fall into the category of cold viruses. There are viruses that don't give you prolonged immunity.
Okay.
My approach personally to this over this last 15 months was to get lots of small exposures. And that's a nice way to build your T cell response to these viruses, so that when I finally got a big viral load, I had nothing but a mild headache for a couple of days. So things like using hand sanitizer, which completely kills all of your protective bacteria on the hands, for instance, is, to me, it's crazy making, because you're decreasing your own ability to fight these pathogens. Whereas what you want to do is actually get tiny doses of these things if you're not a high risk patient, in order to prep your immune system to fight it off if you see it in a bigger dose down the road.
Now, that makes a lot of sense. I remember years ago, TV stations, when I was a TV station, everybody went through this craze where, like, we were running around swiping everything for germs and taking them in and getting it analyzed to see, oh my God, what terrible things showed up at Cherry Creek Mall, right? And it turns out all that ever showed up on anything was pretty much just your basic common cold things. But I was doing an interview with the woman. She was a doctor who ran the test for us. And I said, she had a 2-year-old. And I said, well, how do you protect your 2-year-old? And she said, I don't. She said, I let the kid touch the grocery cart. I don't use the hand wipes for exactly what you said. She said, sooner or later, she's going to get something. Mm-hmm. And it's much better for her as a child to build up these smaller steps. So you're saying, so everything basically that Dr. Fauci's telling us is wrong.
No. Dr. Fauci could not be wrong, could he? Not Dr. Fauci.
I'm not even sure how to respond to that.
Okay, all right. I think you hit it on the head. And I think that there are absolutely, you know, this is a virus, like any kind of virus or any kind of flu or anything, that can be very dangerous for certain groups of people. And if you're in that group of people, like my sister has a lot of chronic health issues, and so she's been very careful, and I absolutely don't blame her. We've pretty much lived our life, but it is a decision that should be made between you, like every other medical decision, you and your doctor. And you shouldn't have CNN deciding that you can't get on an airplane anymore because you won't do what they think you should, what they're trying to pressure you to do.
I agree. Every one of us is slightly different, thank heavens. And so we have slightly different medical needs. So as with any medical intervention, what makes sense is for me to sit down with each patient and weigh the risks of getting the coronavirus versus the potential benefits or risks of getting one of these injections, and decide which side holds the most weight. So for, say, my 87-year-old father, who's getting a little more frail these days, he chose to get one of the mRNA shots. Mm-hmm. I thought that was perfectly appropriate, though we haven't stayed away from him, meaning me and all my siblings and all of the grandkids. We've just had normal interactions with my father through all of this, and he hasn't gotten sick. But someone like that, it makes sense to get the immunization. At this point, though, think about some of the blood clotting and platelet consumption risks that are being seen with all four of these, not only the AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson, but also the mRNA shots from Pfizer and Moderna. So they all have some life-ending potential side effects. And I would hate to make something like this mandatory. Give it to children. Watch your child die of a clotting episode. My heavens. Yeah. Yeah. There are people who would not have gotten very sick at all from the coronavirus who got the immunization or the vaccine or the shot, thinking they were doing something good, and now they're dead.
Yeah.
I just don't understand that. Now, if I were counseling, say, the 39-year-old pregnant woman in Salt Lake City who died after, I don't remember which vaccine she had. Well, first of all, who in the right mind would give one of these injections to a pregnant woman? That's
okay.
Beyond my ability to understand.
Right.
But my goodness, what healthy 39-year-old is really at much risk for getting sick from this?
Well, what is the recovery?
This is a private decision. This has no place as a societal mandate. Absolutely none.
What is the recovery rate these days of ivermectin or whatever other?
Well, I've used it just personally in my practice. I've treated about 90 people with coronavirus, and I learned my treatment from friends who are ICU doctors in the trenches in New York City. So learned early on that hydroxychloroquine and Zithromax and systemic or inhaled steroids were just a great combination, especially the earlier on in the course that you use them. So I've really had nobody end up in the hospital except for one gentleman whose wife went to pick up his hydroxychloroquine and Z-Pak, saw what I was prescribing. She didn't like that our president spoke favorably, so she didn't give them to him. So he ended up in the hospital for a couple of days, and he did fine, but everyone else stayed out of the hospital, and nobody got all that sick.
Have you ever, I mean, in your history, as you know, your career, seen a situation like this where there is this mounting government, corporate, media pressure on people to require you to get a vaccine that, number one, as you pointed out, has not been thoroughly tested anyway, where there are clearly issues with it, at least for some people, and for other people, it may not, like you said, the benefit cost benefit or the risk benefit. I mean, has there ever been something like this before?
Well, with no rewards. The reward being, no, you keep your mask on,
yeah,
and have all that.
And you're
no,
socially distanced.
According to Dr. Fauci, you cannot go to a restaurant and where people are eating because well, he couldn't identify why because it just wasn't an intelligent thing to do if you follow the science.
Yeah.
Although he couldn't follow the science and tell us why it was intelligent, but it's amazing. You have to take it, and it'll do you no good. You'll still have to wear a mask. You know, you can't socialize. No, you can't see your kids. It's just an amazing moment in American history for a lot of reasons.
I completely agree. I've been in practice for 31 years. I am a family medicine doctor, so I take care of all ages and all conditions.
Yeah.
The most bizarre thing I've ever seen, and I look upon the mask, like we have so much data that masks do nothing for transmission of viral illnesses, and that those studies come from either the surgical literature or influenza, large-scale right. influenza societal trials. And so to see everyone walking around in a mask, it's merely a sign that they will bend over and give up their freedoms to the government when the government tells them to do so. And so it's really, it has nothing to do with health.
Right.
And it's really weird for me to watch people en masse giving up the freedom of society, of
human interaction,
the freedom right. to operate their business, the freedom to worship, the freedom to speak their mind. It's all political. Now, I'm not saying that the virus is political. I'm just saying that it was created and then used for political purposes. But yeah, it's a real virus. Yes, it's killing people. But I've never seen people give up their freedom so readily.
Hey, we have
that's what the mask is a sign of.
Exactly. Hey, we have Charlene has raised raised her hand. So I think that means, Charlene, that you have a question to ask Dr. McCallum. If you want to just go ahead and unmute yourself, if you want to, and pop, can you do that?
Oh, hi there. Yes, I just have a quick question. I don't understand why they're not using like minute portions of the virus to build up antibodies like they do with other vaccines. And also, if you've had the corona, why do you need to take the injection?
Right. Okay, thanks, Charlene.
I mean, could we put you in the position of Dr. Fauci instead? Because you have a great deal more wisdom on this matter. So the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is a traditional viral vaccine, like the flu vaccine is, you know, to give you a little piece of the spike protein. But it's kind of interesting, isn't it? It's still got some significant reactions in a small number of people. So Charlene, yeah, you've summed it up just fine. And even when you look at those sort of vaccines, like, would you get a vaccine that you're for something that's not going to make you very sick?
No.
Yeah,
right.
Uh-huh.
All right. Charlene, Charlene, thank you.
Job.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Well, and you know, Dr. McCallum, that's a thing too. Again, this is, it'd be one thing where if this was a vaccine, I mean, I don't know what, for something that was like for Ebola or something like that, right?
For Ebola.
You know, it's something like that. Then maybe if Ebola was running rampant in the country and for some reason we weren't able to stop it, and then I could maybe see considering it. But for this, it's the flu. From, I mean, like I said, we had it. We weren't that sick. Some people, I agree with you. I mean, you do a good job pointing out for some people, they get very sick. Some people it's fatal. But on the other hand, doctors, we know who those people are now. Do you see this? I mean, I know this is more of a political question than a medical question. Do you see this resolving itself? Or, I mean, to me, it seems like it's not going to, which is why we need this bill that would prohibit discrimination against people who didn't want to take the virus or the vaccine, rather.
I completely agree. This is not going to end. I think each time Americans give up a little bit of their freedom, like covering their face with a face diaper, then the government pushes it a little further and go, well, let's see if we can make them all take this shot that's going to do God knows what to their immune systems in the future. And then, oh, we have to have a third dose. Well, we know that immunity to coronaviruses doesn't last very long. Initially, I would say midsummer last summer, we had a big study, I think British Medical Journal, showing that antibodies lasted on average 38 days, at the most about 90 days, 70 to 90 days. But more of your immunity is involved not in the B cells that make antibodies, but with the T cells, which are your natural killer cells, your sort of soldiers out in the field looking for something to fight. And so the T cells, when they see this virus, they're really your big protection. That's how I tried to get a little bit of exposure kind of all through this last 15 months, so that when I finally got a big exposure, I wouldn't get sick, and I didn't.
How'd you get a little exposure?
Just by living your life?
I don't wear a face diaper ever. And so my patients, I take care of people. I hug my patients. I shake their hands. And I touch doorknobs, and I don't use any hand sanitizer, and I don't use wipes. And I go to the grocery store, and I handle the carts. I live a normal life. That's how we get little exposures.
I got you.
All right, Dr. McCallum, you are our hero,
yes,
as always,
you
and you keep Chuck alive.
And you keep me alive. That's a mixed bag. I said keeping me alive is a mixed bag.
No, it's a good thing. Hey, I want
any no small feet.
Before we let you go, just any final thoughts or any final point you would like to make?
Please, 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 I want people to look at House Bill 21-1191. It is called the, what is it actually called? Concerning the Prohibition Against Discrimination Based on the Refusal to Obtain a COVID-19 Vaccine. We must get this passed. We must get it passed. There are eight, I believe, eight people who are leaning towards the vaccine task force. These are on the Health and Insurance Committee. And these are Susan Lontine, Karen McCormick, Yadira Caraveo, Dominique Jackson, Kyle Mulica, Brianna Titone, Chris Kennedy, and David Ortiz. We have got to put pressure on those eight people to change their mind. We cannot let these people take away our constitutionally guaranteed freedoms.
Right. All right. Absolutely. We agree. We'll do what we can to help get the publicity out. We thank you.
Thank you very much.
For bringing it to our attention.
You. And I'm sure we've got
thank
some,
you so much.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Dr. Bye-bye. Julie Bye-bye. McCallan with Denver Cenogenics. You know, this might be a good time. We had a bite that we didn't use the last show. Thomas, I'm giving you a little heads up that, but Tucker Carlson had a great monologue on the whole vaccine thing and why, you know, we absolutely cannot be discriminated against if people choose not to get it. He points out there are a lot of questions about this vaccine. And as Julie McCallan, and the you know, this is coming on the heels of the news about the blood clots. So Thomas, if we could play that Tucker Carlson vaccine bite, please.
For some context, some versions of the birth control pill are believed to cause blood clots in about 1 out of every 1,000 women. That's a far higher rate. So why the concern about this vaccine? Well, because there are reasons to believe those, in fact, are not the real numbers. The real numbers may be much higher than that. Why do we think that? Well, this morning, federal health authorities, including the FDA and the CDC, called on state governments to stop administering the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. According to no less than Tony Fauci, this ban could be permanent.
Are you ruling out the possibility that the vaccine could be removed from the market? I mean, are you ruling out that, are you expecting it to be reallowed?
You know, I think it would be premature to comment on that. And that's the reason why the pause was done, so that they could take a good look at it very carefully, look at every different factor. I wouldn't want to speculate as to what would happen.
Notice the caginess there. It's premature. I wouldn't want to speculate, says a man who speculates for a living. In the statement you just saw, Tony Fauci is asking us to believe something that's amazing if you think about it. For months, he and the rest of the public health establishment have been badgering the country to take a vaccine they claim is absolutely perfectly safe. That's what they told us until yesterday. Now, Fauci has declared that because the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has injured 6 people, if that's true, by the way, it would make that vaccine much safer, not simply than birth control pills, but much safer than many other vaccines we've distributed in the past. Because this one vaccine has hurt 6 people out of 7 million, we need to stop using it immediately. Does that make sense to you? No, it really doesn't. It seems possible there may be more going on here.
Yeah. I think so too. I mean, I hadn't thought about it. That's a really good point. First, I mean, I'm glad they're pausing it because it's you know, that helps kind of make it easier for people like us to say, I don't want to get the vaccine. But he has a point. Is there some, you know, these are companies, by the way, that are can't be held liable for it, right? Right. They have, they're immune from any kind of prosecution.
They're like politicians.
Right, exactly.
I must admit, when I see Tony Fauci these days, I just think of the phrase, the banality of evil. He is a banality of evil. He is just an evil human being who's imposed enormous harm on millions of people.
And doesn't want to give it up. Hey, that is wrapping it up for us. I want to remind folks, first, thank you to everybody. Thank you, Charlene, everybody on Zoom.
Great to have Julia. You know, you guys talked, we've talked about her, and it's, I think a lot of people got to hear her personally.
She makes a lot of sense.
She's just tremendous.
That's right. You can catch everything at chuckandjulie.com. Love to have you subscribe to us on YouTube and follow us and, you know.
Everything.
Just follow, just everything, Chuck
follow
and Julie.
Where we go.
Thanks again.
We're going to a eating place. Follow us there today.
Chuck is going to spend some family time with me and Rev today as opposed to going to the ballet. So it's the family.
What a great guy. Are you talking about a great guy?
Holy cow. Hey, and thank you to the wonderful folks, Thomas and everybody at BBS Radio. We will see you all on Monday, but happy party Friday.
Take care, everybody.